talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Here's Johnny.
Who's looking at you, kid?
We're on a mission from God.
We are movie geeks, and we are on a mission from God, and that is to talk about movies. That's what we do. We Are Movie Geeks is the podcast version of our popular website, wearemoviegeeks.com. I'm Tom Stockman.
It's Jim Batts.
And I'm Michael Hafner.
Michael Hafner is here today. He's sitting in for Michelle, who is not here again. Michael, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
You've been writing for We Are Movie Geeks as a contributing movie reviewer for a couple of years now.
I have.
What are some of your favorite movies and directors and actors and things like that?
Well, I mean, growing up in sort of like a horror film household, I grew up, you know, watching Hammer horror films and Ray Harryhausen monster films. That kind of spread into, like, in my college years, discovering kind of weird and bizarro movies and foreign cinema. So I, you know, discovering David Lynch and discovering Alejandro Jodorowsky. But then also on the flip side, the more artsy films from, like, Fellini, like 8½, or Jean-Luc Godard, like Band of Outsiders, mm-hmm. or... So, yeah, I mean, I kind of run the gamut, but I like just really films that, you know, you're not going to necessarily see on a Sunday morning at the matinee.
Sure. Who are some of your favorite actors and actresses?
Lately, I love Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a very interesting character actor that's also kind of crossed into the mainstream cinema. And, yeah, I mean, Scarlett Johansson's not bad to look at either. So.
Oh,
I think we all enjoyed Under the Skin last year.
Yes, I think so.
Well, some more than others.
Some more than others, for sure.
Yes.
The top 10 box office. As we predicted, the number 2 and number 1 are Inside Out and Jurassic World. Jurassic World made $54 million, and Inside Out made, it was right behind it. It was close at $52 million. Max came in at number 4 with $12 million.
Yeah, it wasn't a Mad Max.
No.
You know, it's a military Max, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Military Max.
I saw that.
Canine Max.
Yeah. Yes. But number 3 was Ted 2 with $33 million, which is pretty good, I guess.
Well, I heard that they were looking for more of a $50 million opening. Mm. It's certainly not as strong as the opening of the first Ted. Like about 3 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah, that made like $56 million.
Was it like the biggest grossing R-rated film ever? Or something?
Yeah, it
or
beat
close
the Matrix
to?
Films.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I liked Ted 2 a lot, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. Number 5 was Spy. Number 6, San Andreas, still doing well. Dope, number 7. I saw that over the weekend. That was interesting. Insidious 3 was number 8. Mad Max Fury Road, still in the top 10. Number 9, Avengers, was number 10. So it looks like Tomorrowland has sadly dropped off the top 10. In fact, it's over the Dollar Show, I noticed.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling that Ultron will probably be off the top 10 mm-hmm. after this weekend. I think we got a couple of strong contenders opening on Wednesday, so it'll probably be off that.
I don't even think Tomorrowland cracked $100 million yet. Like, it's
really?
Still...
But it cost over $100 million.
I know. It cost like $180 million, I think.
Yeah, I think somewhere in the top 15 is Meet Earl, and I think I read on a site last night it's only in about 350 screens across the country.
It was just below $1 million, they said.
Yeah, so that's...
That's
that
not bad.
...few screens, it's not bad, because you consider that, you know, Ted 2 is in like 3,500 screens, mm-hmm. something like that.
And we're going to talk about Meet Earl later, aren't we?
Yeah. We'll talk about that. We've all three seen that. Mm. I'll talk about Max a little bit right now. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about it, because it's not going to be around for much longer.
So was Max like a bad dog?
Max was as good a dog as ever passed through this facility.
You've seen the poster for Max. It shows this dog in a... He's actually a Belgian shepherd. He looks kind of like a German shepherd. He's wearing kind of a flak jacket, and it says Marine Hero Best Friend, and you think it's going to be sort of a war version of with a canine, sort of like War Horse or something like that. And it does take place in the Afghan War, but that's like the first 10 minutes. After that, it goes to Texas, and it becomes this rather poorly written and poorly acted melodrama. It's really not very good at all. I kind of had high hopes for it. It looked sort of interesting. You've got some really bad performances by Lauren Graham. Not that people were going to go to this movie for the performances, but she really stood out like a sore thumb.
Oh, but she'll never be as good as she was in Bad Santa.
No, she was quite sexy in Bad Santa.
Oh, yes. She really loves Santa.
Yeah.
So was Max at least better than the Air Bud films?
Not much.
Now, I read your review of it, Tom. I read a couple other reviews, and there's a plot point in it, and I don't think we're giving a whole lot away, that just sounds so ludicrous. I was like, how did that ever get past the editors or anybody?
With the Mexican gunrunners?
Yeah, I mean, some guy smuggling guns from the military in Afghanistan and while in the Middle East. I was like, what?
Yeah, and he smuggles like 12 huge cases of military-grade firearms somehow from Afghanistan, and then he's selling them to the Mexican drug cartel, and he moves into, you know, Max's new owner's house with the son who's the only person that Max can bond with. It gets really ridiculous. It ends with car chases and kidnappings and exploding cars. And
this is a PG family film, right?
Okay, it is a PG family film.
Go America.
But not PG-13, but
yes.
But PG.
No, it's PG. I think it did $12 million, which probably isn't too bad. It probably cost, I don't know, maybe $25-30 million to make. I think people went and saw it because they'd already seen Inside Out and Jurassic World, and they wanted to take their kids to a summer movie. And it doesn't really play like a summer movie. It plays like a kind of a bottom drawer, you know, Disney knockoff from the 70s. We don't recommend Mad Max. Very disappointing.
We do recommend Mad Max.
Yes, we do recommend Mad Max.
We can't recommend it highly.
Although I do recommend Ted 2.
So I got some big news. Tammy Lynn and I are going to have a baby.
That's awesome. Wait, how do you guys...
We need a sperm donut.
Did you see Ted 2, Michael?
I did not. I saw the first one. That was enough for me.
Yeah.
I thought Ted 2 was actually pretty darn hysterical. I thought it was actually a funnier movie than the first one. What do you think, Jim?
Oh, I had lots of problems with it. I think that Seth MacFarlane can get pretty lazy sometimes in doing his comedy shtick. There were several sequences where they were just recreating scenes from previous films, but with no twist or gag to it. It's like, oh, look at us. We're doing Footloose. We're doing Breakfast Club. We're doing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Isn't that cute? Well, put a spin on it. Do something, you know? And a lot of it was very, very indulgent. There's a huge 30s-type tap dance number over the opening credits.
It opens with it.
And, you know, unlike Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which sort of sets you in the mood for a 30s-type story, this is just kind of showing off a little bit, it seemed.
Yeah, I didn't care for that either. I had a bad feeling when that was, because it wasn't funny, and it was kind of full blown and sort of spectacular, but it's like, what is the point of doing this?
And for a few minutes they get into a courtroom drama with Amanda Seyfried and John Slattery doing these eloquent sort of opening statements, and there's nothing funny in it. And Slattery, who all of the fans of Mad Men know is a really funny actor, has really nothing to do with it. And like I say, Mila Kunis isn't in this one, but they bring back Giovanni Ribisi's character, Donnie, which nobody wants to see come back. The movie, whenever it would cut to him with the head of the toy company, the movie screeches, slams into a concrete wall, and you know, it just comes to a halt.
True. Not the strongest part of the movie, but laugh for laugh, the movie was pretty darn hilarious. And you mentioned Amanda Seyfried. I thought they used her quite well. There was a running gag about her big buggy eyes where they keep comparing her to Gollum that was hysterical.
That's funny. I enjoyed those. Although the thing of her with her character is she doesn't know pop culture, she knows classic literature, and I was thinking, you're telling me a woman that knows The Great Gatsby wouldn't know The Lord of the Rings? You know, come on, I think they'd be familiar with both pieces of literature, I would think, you know.
I almost think Seth MacFarlane kind of writes to his strength, and his strength is just writing punchlines. You know, he's not really good with writing stories, at least judging by the first Ted film and judging by A Million Ways to Die in the West. It's like he can write these little situations or these funny one-liners, and then he structures a film based around a series of these.
True, but a raunchy comedy, you have to judge it by how much you laughed, and I laughed quite a bit.
All right.
I don't know. I didn't really care about the characters. You were supposed to care about Ted being able to marry Tammy Lynn, I think it was the character's name, and she's kind of a one-dimensional bimbo in it. She's, you know, cracking her gums.
But she doesn't go on the road trip. Her small. Amanda Seyfried, and she's a pothead too. You know, that's the big running gag. And she pulls out this penis-shaped bong that they're just, you know, they want to get high, but they don't want to smoke out of this penis-shaped bong. And that becomes a running gag. And I thought that was hysterical.
Well, the bong stuff gets kind of tiring after a while. I mean, come on, let's, you know, just having them light up and toke up, you know, isn't a guaranteed laugh. Well, let's talk about Tammy Lynn. There's an opening scene after the marriage where they do sort of another riff on a classic movie. It's like they're doing Raging Bull with Tammy and and Ted screaming at each other in the kitchen. And then, you know, he's back with his buddy Mark, and he says, well, you know what helped the marriage? Let's have a kid. And I was like, someone should stop it and say, no, that's a terrible idea. You know, if they could have had a cameo from Dr. Phil, he says, I don't think so, you know, or something. Yeah.
But you got to love the last, I guess, half hour or so that actually took place at the New York Comic Con. And you had Patrick Walburton.
Being a geek,
I
love that.
Have a ton of cameos, I guess, during that sequence.
Michael Dorn, is that the actor?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Patrick Warburton is Ted's gay buddy, and he introduces at the wedding at Ted's wedding his boyfriend, who's played by Michael Dorn. And guess who the two dress up as at Comic Con?
Flash Gordon?
No. Well, you know Patrick Warburton.
He was the tick.
He's the tick again, and I love that part. And Dorn is Lieutenant Worf again.
Yeah.
And
that's
weird.
Very funny.
It's weird because one of his co-stars from DS9 has a cameo in it earlier, Nana Vistor from that show, so it's almost a mini reunion. But I will admit the cameo, and I guess we can go ahead and spoil it because it's been in some of the reviews, the cameo by Liam Neeson.
That's amazing.
That's
funny. What he does in that one scene, it almost seems sort of improvised. He goes into Ted's grocery store and buys a box of Trix cereal and gives this monologue about how he's worried that Trix are for kids and that people are going to follow him home. And
so if I purchase this, will I be someone, you know, because if you're wrong, I'll kill you.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, Liam had a half a day with nothing to do and did it as a favor to
He's part of the Seth. Part of the Seth pack, I guess. But like I say, Mila, you know, escaped this one. But I guess Amanda's part of that Seth pack.
It's not a great movie, but it made me laugh. It obviously made me laugh a little more than it made Jim laugh. So kind of a mixed review on Ted 2. Jim got to see Magic Mike XXL, which also opens this Wednesday.
I got a little treat for y'all tonight. We're gonna see if he still got some magic in that mic.
Guys are envious of me. I can feel it.
I haven't seen any reviews on it, but you can go ahead and give us yours.
Yeah. I guess there's an embargo till tomorrow night, but you know what the hey. But Mike, you said you saw the first one.
I did see the first one.
Yeah.
I actually liked it more than my wife, which I don't know what that says, but yeah.
Well, you know, I think the strongest, the most entertaining part, I don't know if you'll agree with me, the first one is Matthew McConaughey as Dallas, the sort of club owner, the guy that's running. The Wrangler, the stripper Wrangler, I guess you'd say. He's very entertaining in the first one, and he is nowhere to be found in the second one. So that's kind of a strike against it. That's a tough get to
hurdle.
He's
getting a little bit old for, you know, taking off the clothes and, you know, doing all those gymnastic-type moves that they do on stage. So.
Well, that's true, but still, just to have him there would be fun.
Yeah,
although there's a sequence in which Gabriel Iglesias, the comedian that goes by the name of Fluffy, I think he does an impression of Matthew, and it's kind of funny. So while the first film was sort of an introduction to this world, and you're sort of seeing it through the eyes of this new character, called The Kid, interestingly enough. The Kid is nowhere in this one either. With this one, it's more of a road trip. It's 3 years later. Mike is out of the game. He's you know, cutting lumber, putting together stuff for homes, doing interior design. And he gets a call from one of the guys saying that they need to get back together, and it's a trick, and he goes back there. And they have the idea that they're going to get the act together, put it on the road, and go to the big stripper convention in Myrtle Beach. It's all them pretty much on this this yogurt bus, or not a yogurt bus, I guess it would be a truck, actually, one of the food trucks.
Mm-hmm.
They have little adventures on the road. Now, the love interest for Mike from the first film is nowhere to be found in this one also, which...
That's probably a good thing.
That is, you know, I hate to, you know, take a swing at an actress, but oh my god.
Who
goodness.
Was that? I don't even recall.
I just recall just.
You don't recall her name?
I don't recall her name. I just recalled not being real impressed.
Yeah, the chemistry between her and Channing was nowhere to be.
So is this movie any good?
Well, like the first film, it doesn't really come alive until the guys are on stage. I don't think Jada Pinkett Smith is recruited on the road there to be their new MC, which which is what Matthew McConaughey was, and she's sort of doing her character from the Gotham TV show, and I got really tired of that character after about three or four episodes. They pick up a couple of new dancers. They got Donald Glover from Community. He's very good at it. Their acts are very entertaining, but say a lot of the, you know, even with Amber Heard, who's a much better actress playing Mike's love interest in this, when it's off the stage or off the pole, it's just not doing much. But some of those sequences are really spectacular. The best sequence in it is Joe Manganiello as Big Dick Richie. He's a really entertaining character, and at one point they all take a dose of Molly, and they decide they stop at a little convenience store, and they give him an assignment. It said, you think you can make that clerk smile? And he goes in there and does this elaborate grind next to the cooler, and he's tossing chips up in the air, and the guys are watching from outside, and the clerk is barely looking up from her cell phone, and it's really funny, and it's the best scene in the film.
So what would you give it? We do the 5-star rating system at MovieGeeks.com. What are you going to give it in your review?
I'm going to give it a 3.
3,
I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's better than it looks, because I thought it looked pretty lousy. Steven Soderbergh is not back.
Yeah, but he is. He did photograph it, and he did edit it.
So he usually photographs under a different pseudonym. Yeah. You know, he doesn't go under Steven Soderbergh.
So it sounds like it was sort of supervised by him, so maybe that helped it a little
bit. Well, it's his assistant director from most of his other films. So, Jacobs, I think, is his last name.
He was the AD, I think, on Che and The First Magic Mike and The Girlfriend Experience, a couple of others.
Jim and I saw another movie last week. We can't say the name of it, but it was really pretty awful. It stars a certain actor who was known for playing Hal Jordan in a superhero movie. It is one of the most ridiculous science fiction movies I have ever seen. I guess we can really lay into that in detail next week. But holy cow, talk about a bad movie.
Comes out the 10th, but they're running a lot of commercials for it already. Yeah. Oh,
that's really disappointing because that director is actually quite good. I think I think he's a visual sort of master.
Yeah, you know, not in this movie.
Oh, well, this is a little better than his last film. His last film was Mirror, Mirror, the weakest of the Snow White films.
Yeah. Okay, the other movie that opened over the weekend that all three of us saw was called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
You might be someone who could make Rachel feel better.
I don't need your stupid pity.
I'm not here because I pity you. I'm actually here because my mom is making me.
It's actually worse.
Michael, you reviewed it at WeAreMovies.com and you gave it, I think, 4 out of 5 stars.
It 4 out of 5.
What did you like about it?
I think it's one of those films that, on the surface, it looks like the traditional sort of Sundance film that comes out every year. That's like the big cute Sundance indie film. You know, every year there's always like a new one that comes out, and
the Wackness a couple years ago.
The Sunshine,
Fruitvale Station,
where it's overly sentimental and it pulls at the heartstrings, and all the critics kind of get behind it, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is the next big thing for this year. And I think in this case, yes, even though on the surface it has all of the elements that you would see like in a quirky indie comedy, for some reason, it all worked for me. I think a lot of it has to do with the actors and actresses in the film. But I think actually the director, who actually did a horror film last year called The Town That Dreaded Sundown, and he also directed a couple of Glee episodes and whatnot, and American Horror Story episodes, he does a really good job of combining different story elements. Like you have the cancer drama, and you have the coming-of-age high school film. You know, and you've got all of these, and you even have it being a love letter to cinema in general, too. And I think he does a really good job combining all these different kind of film genres into one.
I had a feeling that I would have liked to have seen a film just about these two guys making their little quirky films.
They made that film. It was called Be Kind, Rewind. That's one thing I didn't like was those films, because you had mentioned it. And what was clever about those besides the titles? I mean, and were we supposed to think they were feature length?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think they went into that.
It's like a Sockwork Orange, and then they have some socks, you know, acting out a scene from Clockwork Orange. I think there was 2:58 p.m. Cowboys. So you had Earl walking down the street with a cowboy hat while Everybody's Talking is playing.
But that's exactly the point of the character. The point of the character, which, again, at the very... And I wrote about it in my review. At the beginning of the film, I didn't even like him. You know, I thought, it's like, God, I'm going to be stuck with this self-centered narcissist the whole time. In his kind of film parodies, he's parodying just the surface level of the film. Like you said, Clockwork Orange instead of A Clockwork Orange. And so this actually all goes into the character where... His interactions with people and the way he views people is on the surface. You know, it's all surface level communication with people. And the same thing with the film here, how he's looking at these classic genre films. He's not actually viewing the film for the reasons why they were made. He's looking at it from, like you said, 2:38 p.m. cowboy instead of midnight cowboy. And so I think it just enhances the character and how finally through the dying girl that he meets, he's able to kind of tap into his own human emotions and deeper down into other people's
I think you're reading too much into it. I think they had like this stop motion animation that they showed. They kept showing it over and over again. And all the film references, they were just like shiny objects to distract you from the fact that you were watching this pretty awful movie. The character's Earl. Who the hell is Earl? I mean, he was the most underwritten character. He was barely in the thing. And then when they do show him, you know, he's black. So, of course, he lives on the wrong side of the tracks and he has a pit bull. The dying girl, the last 20 minutes gets really maudlin because they've just, you know, it's like they've forgotten they were making a cancer drama. So they write in all these, you know, supposedly sad scenes at the end. It was precious and it was overwritten and it's just the kind of movie. It seems like every year or two a movie just kind of gets under my skin like a bad rash in a bad way. Moonrise Kingdom, Kings of Summer, Incredibly Loud or whatever that
And incredibly close.
And I just there's bad movies and there's movies that just make me cringe. And this, I'm afraid Me and Earl and the Dying Girl was this year's movie that I just hated.
Well, I have a feeling you avoided, you dodged it like a bullet last summer's The Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah.
Well, this is miles above that, thank heaven. But yeah, like I say, I found some of it interesting, but I thought the girl itself, and I can't even recall the character's name, this played by Olivia Cooke, I believe.
Yeah. Rachel,
Rachel, I just, she's not that interesting a character. No. You know, you see her putting on fun multicolored wigs and all that. And there's a very funny sequence in which one of the, photos on the wall in her bedroom comes to life, and it's very.
I thought that was a ridiculous sequence.
It was kind of fun, you know. I kind of livened things up a little bit.
It did. Well, it needed to be livened up.
But again,
it was just a distraction. It didn't move the story forward, and none of the films, the little movies within a movies, had anything to do with the story. And another thing that bugged me a little bit, it's like. It seemed like a 50-year-old screenwriter's idea of cult movies. Are 17-year-olds really going to worship Godard and Truffaut? Wouldn't they be making spoofs of Tarantino and some more modern filmmakers?
But I did enjoy the adults in it too. I thought that Molly Shannon was kind of fun. Well,
I liked her too. She's always
and
good.
Oh, Nick Offerman can do no wrong ever in my book. And I thought Connie Britton had a nice role. And John Barenthal is just the ultimate cool teacher.
He steals the show. For sure.
You know, what was the scene though where he gives them some of their soup and then they're hallucinating? And what do they see when they're hallucinating? A guy in a bear suit and a guy in a pig suit.
That was stupid. I agree, that was stupid.
Supposed to be like hipster irony as far as, you know, drug induced hallucinations go? It just seemed lazy.
Yeah, to me the only thing that was really distracting was the camera work. I thought he tried to get a little too like Wes Anderson.
It failed.
I did find that to be extremely distracting, and if they would have just focused more on the characters and their conversations naturally without trying to do this fancy cropping or having a double exposure at the same time and stuff like that, I didn't care for that.
Yeah, just tell the story. You don't need little tricks and you know.
Well, you did need tricks because there was not much of a story being told.
I think there's a good story to talk about with the character himself, and I think he went on a very heartfelt journey that I bought into. And obviously, it's going to play differently for different people.
There are people that really, really love it, and I went and saw it expecting. I had pretty high hopes, and yikes.
I didn't give it a 5 out of 5, though. So you got to, you know.
Just the quirky teen cancer drama.
Yeah, that's turning out to be a subgenre of sort of young adult novels nowadays, isn't it? The teen, you know, teen cancer romance or something. There's going to be a section in at Barnes and Noble or something. It's, like I say, it's pulling them in the limited amount of theaters around the country. So,
and some people are going to like it, and that's fine.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about: movie criticism.
It's right.
It is, today is, July 28th or 29th?
June 29th,
I'm sorry. Yes. So the year is halfway over.
Yes.
We're going to talk, has it been a good year for movies so far? What have we liked so far this year? What have we hated so far this year, besides me hating Me and Earl and the Dying Girl? And what movies do we have to look forward to? Jim, what do you think are the best movies so far of 2015? Think it's been a good year?
It's half over. I still think it's early. I think usually at the end of the year, we get those big Oscar, you know, serious type films. So we've got a few months left. But as far as my favorites of the year so far, I'll start with my my number three, which would... I would put Inside Out as my number three. I more I think about it, the more I kind of appreciate the sort of the clever idea of it and the execution somewhat. I think it's putting Pixar right back on the correct track and kind of away from just you know, doing sequels of their previous hits. It's a truly original idea, and I hope to check it out a second time here soon. I have a feeling I might catch some things and appreciate it a little bit more, and it has the funniest ending of any film.
It does. And I've seen it twice. It is very dense. You will pick up on some things.
And I know we're going to clash on my second choice, probably with both of you, but I really enjoy Love and Mercy.
Excuse me. Oh. Can I help you today?
I'd like to buy a car.
Do you know who this man is? Brian Wilson. Of the Beach Boys.
I think even though the sequences with John Cusack as the older Brian Wilson are weak, I think that the story or the sections with Paul Dano as Brian Wilson in his mid-60s glory are just really compelling worth seeing.
No, I'm not in disagreement at all. I think we talked about this at length last week. It's almost like it's two movies. One is just a fantastic movie, and one is a real downer. And I don't know if I would say the John Cusack stuff ruins the Paul Dano stuff, but it certainly prevents the movie from really soaring.
Yeah.
You reviewed that. I think you gave it 3.
I did. I wasn't as taken with the film. I do appreciate the music. I love the sequences when Paul Dano's in the studio and concocting this music. I thought both lead actors give a great performance, but I thought the film felt very disjointed, and it felt like it was just haphazardly jumping from scene to scene without having a fluid motion to everything.
You reviewed Inside Out for us, didn't you? Yeah. I don't know if you seen it a second time yourself?
I didn't see Inside Out a second time. I don't know if I need to yet. I might wait for DVD or Blu-ray.
Oh, it's going to look gorgeous on Blu-ray.
In 3D.
Definitely.
So what's your number one of the year so far?
Well, I think you know this one.
Yeah, I think it's probably all of our number ones.
Probably.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, what a day! What a lovely day!
It's going to be tough to top that.
No, I know. It's amazing.
Pure, not only, you know, thrill, you know, the action stuff, but just the visual spectacle of it.
The direction, the cinematography.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing how good it is and how not disappointing it is.
Yeah, it has a tough Road Warrior, and you know the original trilogy is a tough mountain to surmount.
Yeah.
And it does. It just zips right up there, and some would say it maybe surpasses it. I think it's right up there with Road Warrior. I think it's just terrific.
I agree. It's amazing.
Yeah, I saw an interview with George Miller last week on the Later Show, and he's terrific there. He doesn't seem like a man that's 70, so hopefully he can do a couple more.
Yeah. And what would you think is the worst film so far this year?
Boy, I had a lot of front runners for this year. Critics get a lot of bashing, a lot of for liking foreign films. They say, "Oh, if it's, you know, non-English, you're going to love it." Well, my runner-up for least favorite was Saint Laurent, which I talked about a couple of podcasts ago. But another one I talked about, which will be one of the biggest bombs I predict of the year, is Aloha.
Oh yeah,
is just amazingly jaw-droppingly bad.
I haven't seen
considering
that.
Who it's from.
Yeah,
it's from Cameron Crowe, the man that did Say Anything and, you know, Almost Famous, and it's just a convoluted mess, you know, that just lays there.
Crowe's made as many bad films as he has good films.
Yeah,
frankly, Elizabethtown, which this one sort of looks like, Vanilla Sky.
We bought a zoo.
Yeah.
You know
it was We Bought a Zoo wasn't too bad. It was more of a family film. It really didn't seem like a Cameron Crowe film.
Yeah.
But, I have no desire to see Aloha, so thank you for suffering through it. Michael, what do you think of the best films of the year so far, the first half of 2015?
The best films of the year so far for me, I think one of them that will probably go under the radar for most people, but it did get a limited release, and I think it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray not too long here. But it's sort of a mockumentary comedy called What We Do in the Shadows.
That
would have been my number five.
That's on my list, too.
Yeah.
I think the film is just absolutely fantastic. I've always been a big fan of like Best in Show and all of
the mockumentaries.
Those mockumentaries. Yeah. And so I think, Christopher Guest films are great. Drop Dead Gorgeous is another great mockumentary gets overlooked often. This is a vampire mockumentary, and it follows kind of a motley crew of vampire stereotypes. You know, you have the Bram Stoker Dracula vampire, and you have the Nosferatu vampire, and you've got the
Lost Boys type vampire.
Yeah, and it's really, really well done. I think in the hands of anyone else, this could have just been way too on the nose, or just it could have just been way over the top. But in the hands of the people that did Flight of the Conchords, which was a great Aussie show, I think they nailed it.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, there's some great special effects in it, too.
Real subtle.
Yeah, very nice.
Real subtle stuff. What else did you like this year?
I got to revisit the film after seeing it last year at Fantastic Fest, but it's a... Many people would describe it as Richard Linklater meets H.P. Lovecraft, but it's a small little indie horror film called Spring.
Haven't heard of it.
It didn't get released in St. Louis, but it did get released in like New York and L.A. a couple months ago, and I got to interview the directors. Their film's really, it's a really beautiful film, both inside and out. I highly recommend it. It's now available on DVD and Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's probably video on demand, too, I guess.
It is on video on demand. Yeah. But yeah, it's a guy who in the opening scene his mother dies and he ends up losing his job, and so he's got really nothing to live for in the States, and so he gets his passport and travels over to Italy, and while over there he's kind of backpacking and meets different people, and he ends up meeting a beautiful woman, and the film kind of goes into a mystery slash fantasy, I would say. I don't want to say horror, because I don't, even though it has a lot of horror elements, I wouldn't say it's an all-out horror film. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's a really beautiful film.
Yeah.
Spring, right?
Spring.
Yeah. All right, look for that one. And
my number one, without further ado, Mad Max Fury Road.
There you go.
Good man.
Not much else can be said about it other than what you guys have said.
We've talked about it on every show so far, and it's still a great movie. It's still in the top 10.
It'll be interesting to see the Halloween costumes this inspires.
I would love to dress up as Furiosa. I'd shave my head, put on the mechanical arm. I'll cut off my arm. Just dress up just like
There was some at Comic-Con. There was some guy who did the whole Knox character
with the
tattoos and everything. So what do you think's the worst movie so far this year, Michael?
You know, it was really close. I saw a lot of bad films this year. I was not a fan of Chappie. I was not a fan of Focus. But I think the worst film has to be Seventh Son, which much-delayed fantasy
it's like
film.
2 years old or something.
Yeah. It was filmed, like, 20 years ago. But no, Jeff Bridges is in it, and he's horrendous.
What is he doing? What is he doing with his voice the last few films?
You are the seventh son of a seventh son.
He's got a hug of Shaw in his bath.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
They look terrible.
Waste Julianne Moore.
And it cost a lot to make, and it made very little money.
Oh, just awful film. Yeah. That came out around, I think that came out the same week as Jupiter Ascending. It was like two dud fantasies the same week.
Yeah, I think Jupiter Ascending people had fun with.
Yeah,
but I think everybody.
It's not fun.
Seven Sun is not fun.
Julianne's sexy in a couple of scenes, but that's about it,
Yeah. My favorite movie of the year is still Mad Max Fury Road, and I doubt I'll see a better film this year, but you never know. I also like San Andreas a whole lot. You talk about summer blockbusters. That's definitely my favorite. I really like Dwayne Johnson and what he did in this film. The one sort of indie movie that I liked was While We're Young, which was Noah Baumbach's film.
I really loved your film, Power Relief.
You've seen it.
That scene with the dogs around the garbage. How did you stage that?
Those dogs were just there, and I said, hey, shoot those dogs.
Beautiful.
And we were talking about, hipster indie filmmakers earlier, and this movie sort of spoofs that. It's about he's a Gen X or a baby boomer filmmaker, and he meets this young millennial filmmaker played by Adam Driver.
And Seyfried again.
Yeah, and they sort of, did you see it?
I did.
Oh, yeah, they sort of go to war about their different approaches to filmmaking. And Ben Stiller is absolutely brilliant in this movie. He's so funny, and it's a very well-written movie. But I would say, on balance, 2015 has, you know, the first half of 2015 hasn't been particularly good. I think by this time last year, we already had Grand Budapest Hotel and Under the Skin and some movies that ended up making my top 10 list. Besides Mad Max, I hope the second half of the year is a lot better. As far as, there's been a lot of bad movies, though. But really, the worst movie I've seen so far this year is Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Wow.
Just because that is the kind of movie that I really, really hate. This, you know, a smug, quirky, you know, overwritten teen comedy about cancer that I just think misses every mark it goes for. But then again, some people like it, but I just really hated it. So that's 2015 so far. But you know what the heck? There's a lot of good movies coming up.
Yeah, what are you looking forward to, Sam?
I'm really looking forward to Woody Allen's new movie.
Yeah.
That opens, actually, it's called The Irrational Man. It's got Joaquin Phoenix, and they're saying Parker Posey is worthy of an Oscar nom. They're saying it's one of his best, which, you know, I love all of Woody Allen's movies. And of course, that's later this summer. Mission Impossible 5, maybe that'll be really good. But then, of course, later in the year, we've got Tarantino's coming up with Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
And of course, Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm really interested in Trainwreck.
I have a feeling
that could be very, very interesting. I'm catching up with Amy Schumer with her sense of humor and her current Comedy Central show. Yeah. And I think it could be a smart, you know, raunchy comedy, which Ted 2 is not, so, you know.
Yeah.
There's a couple films I'm looking forward to. One is the new version of Macbeth with Michael Fassbender.
Marianne Cotillard.
Yeah, Marianne Cotillard is in it. The director did a film called The Snowtown Murders, which was a really striking film. He's the director behind this. I'm also really looking forward to Carol with Kate Blanchett.
They say that's got a lot of Oscar buzz.
That Todd Haynes?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think that's going to have some Oscar buzz. I'm looking forward to Heart of the Sea, which is Ron Howard's movie about whaling, and it's the story that inspired Moby Dick. That was supposed to come out this summer, and they decided to push it back to Christmas because it's supposedly really good.
Yeah, that's got, well, not only Thor in it, but I think the new Spider-Man is in that, Holland.
So that's movies to look forward in 2015. There's the Steve Jobs story. That looks pretty good. Black Mass, which is the Whitey Bulger story.
Yeah.
That's coming out. There's some good-looking movies coming out later this year. Yeah. Bridge of Spies, Steven Spielberg's movie about the Gary
YouTube,
Francis power rescue with Tom Hanks is in that.
I love Cold War films, I'm looking forward to that.
That'll be right around Christmas, so that could be an Oscar contender. So, stuff to look forward to, and I'm sure we'll be talking about all those movies here at We Are Movie Geeks, the show podcast.
If we die tonight, mankind dies with us.
I've been waiting for you.
Terminator Genesis opens this Wednesday. We have not seen it. We're seeing it tonight.
All three of us will be there, I think. Yeah,
I'm so excited. I hope it's good. I hope it's better than Terminator Salvation, that's for sure.
I missed that one. I did see the third one, Rise of the Machines.
Yeah, Rise of the Machines. I think I'm literally the only person on the planet that liked Terminator Salvation.
Really?
Unabashedly liked it.
Really? Well, and you're entitled.
Yeah.
Arnold wasn't in Terminator Salvation, although they did have
a CGI clone of him makes a cameo.
Yeah, exactly.
I know it's Christian Bale and
Sam Worthington.
And the only thing I remember from Salvation, I didn't see it, but of course I heard that audio clip over and over again.
Well, did you see my top 10 Terminator quotes?
That
was number 3, but it was like him, you know, cussing
good for
out
you.
The, I'm surprised no one, you know, criticized you for ranking that higher than some of the other quotes on that list.
Well, I couldn't think of an actual quote from Terminator Salvation worthy of that list. But
I agree.
Terminator Genesis kind of made us think about Arnold Schwarzenegger. You have to say his name like that if you have a podcast. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold.
And Arnold's been around for quite a while. You know, I mean, I remember seeing all his movies back in the mid-80s, and he was, you know, he was I don't know if younger film fans appreciate how big the guy was. You know, around 1985, he was at the top of the heap box office wise.
Oh yeah, yeah. Every film was just would be number one for the weekend and be a big event. Yeah, big event to go see Arnold's new movie. Yeah, and it's amazing because I remember further away from that when he was a staple of talk shows and you'd hear this guy with this kind of unusual accent and he would say he was going to be a movie star. You're going, what? Yeah, what? Right. Come on, don't be ridiculous. Yeah. You could play Hercules or Samson or something like that.
His very first film was Hercules in New York. I want to talk about that movie. That movie was made in 1969 when he was just 22 years old, and it was filmed in New York.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. You've seen him pumping iron as Conan the Barbarian. Arnold Schwarzenegger, magnificent as Hercules.
His English was so terrible in 1969 that they actually had to have another actor come in and dub his voice. But interestingly, in 1981, after the first Conan movie became such a big hit, they reissued Hercules in New York. That's what I saw. I actually saw it at the drive-in. But by that point, Arnold had taken, elocution lessons, and his English was better. He went back into a studio and redubbed his dialogue for Hercules in New York. So when they reissued it in the early 80s, it had Arnold's voice back in it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they used the original tracks, but he actually...
They brought in some new tracks with Arnold. Have you ever seen Hercules in New York?
I've seen just little bits of it. Arnold Stang is his close star in it, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
The voice of Top Cat.
That's right. Yeah. Arnold Stang was sort of kind of a Phil Silvers kind of nebbish comedian who did a lot of TV in the 60s. And
it's a mad, mad, mad world. It's got that great scene where Jonathan Winters destroys his gas station.
That's right. But actually, Arnold Schwarzenegger was billed as Arnold Strong because this is before he'd won. He was even doing his bodybuilding thing.
Yeah, this was before the pumping iron.
Yeah, pumping irons were in the mid-70s. There's just one, actually. Yeah, yeah. I actually met Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1978. And his English was really bad. But Hercules in New York is actually kind of a fun movie. Yeah, he and Arnold Stang team up, and they ride a chariot through New York, and he fights a guy in a bear suit. And it's pretty awful, but it's a lot of fun.
This was, of course, before the villain. Was the villain right after Stay Hungry?
Yeah, the villain was about 79. He did Stay Hungry, and what was the Robert Altman movie he was in? Long Goodbye. He had some some little roles as a taking advantage of his physique in some movies. Stay Hungry had Jeff Bridges, and it was a kind of a comedy drama that took place in the world of bodybuilding.
But I guess everyone took notice with Pumping Iron as he was so charismatic in that documentary.
Exactly right. Stay Hungry, by the way, has a Sally Field's only topless scene.
Oh.
There you go.
Sister Batrill.
Pumping Iron. Arnold Schwarzenegger is definitely an actor of limited range. Nobody's going to say he's going to ever be nominated for an Oscar. But he has so much charisma. Much presence.
Well, and I think that's why a lot of his later films, he was almost typecast as like the strong and silent type. Like you look at Conan the Barbarian, you look at the Terminator films, these films, even Predator, I mean, he doesn't even have that many speaking lines in a lot of these films. And so they start casting him.
But it's a lot of quips. A lot of,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of quotable lines.
Oh, yeah. Even in more recent films like Sabotage, he had, he was fairly silent through most of it, but had his quotable lines.
Yeah. But his first starring role, you mentioned the villain. That was a comedy spoof with Anne Margaret is the girl and Kirk Douglas is the hero.
Is that Hal Needham?
Oh, no, I take that back. Arnold was the hero, wasn't he?
Yeah, Arnold was the hero. He was like in a pink cowboy outfit, wasn't he?
Yeah. And then Kirk Douglas, I guess, was the villain.
Yeah, he had the big mustache. And it was sort of Hal Needham's follow-up to his Smokey and the Bandit, Hooper films, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't think it made much of a mark, but it didn't hurt Schwarzenegger. Then Schwarzenegger actually played Mickey Hargitay, who had played Hercules in the 60s. Arnold was a big fan of Steve Reeves and Reg Park and Mickey Hargitay and these bodybuilder guys that had gone to Europe and made these Italian-made Hercules and Samson movies. And
And sandal films.
So he played Mickey Hargitay in the Jane Mansfield story, which starred...
Lonnie Anderson, CBS TV movie.
That's right, and that was in 1980. And then, but his big breakthrough was Conan the Barbarian in 1982.
I'm no mercenary. Nobody pays me. And if I think somebody owes me something, I take it.
Yeah, I remember he sort of campaigned to play Conan. You know, he would be on the with Johnny Carson on the Tonight Show. Don't you think I should be Conan? And he would, yeah.
Well, he was perfect as Conan. You remember who played his father?
Ah, that was Big Bill Smith.
That's right, Big Bill Smith.
And Sandal Bergman is Valeria.
Yeah.
James Earl Jones is the villain.
That's right. Yeah. And John Milius made a lot of film. He directed the first one. Richard Fleischer directed the second one. And then Richard Fleischer also directed Red Sonja, which is sort of a follow-up to the Conan movies.
Yeah, he's playing a pseudo-Conan character in it, isn't he? Yeah. Bridget Nielsen. And actually, his Sandal Bergman is the villainess in Red Sonja, isn't she?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah,
I actually saw her at the Fox Theater in a trailing production of the Chicago. She was still doing her dance and stuff.
But between Conan the Destroyer and Red Sonja, he made the Terminator.
I'll be back.
Which is still, I guess, the role he's most identified with.
And the interesting bit of trivia, you know who the one of the original candidates to play the Terminator
It was O.J. Simpson, who went on to terminate Nicole Brown Simpson a decade later.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. But they had a lot of interesting. Also, a friend of mine was telling me that they were considering for Kyle Reese, the guy that comes back to save.
Yeah,
they were talking about John Bon Jovi. They were talking about Bruce Springsteen. They were just throwing out everybody, it seems.
All those actors would have done a fine
job. It's funny to me because everyone thinks about the Terminator franchise as a science fiction, series, and rightfully so. But that first film, it really plays like a horror film, he's just like it's like a stalk and slasher type film where he's just stalking him and Sarah Connor, and it's just he's unheard of evil that's constantly around the corner that doesn't really talk, but he's always there and it's he's like going to get you and he's unstoppable.
He's like a metal Jason at the end of it. He's just unstoppable. Yeah, he even kills poor Dick Miller, I believe, in the first Terminator. Yes. It's like horror film staple.
And Bill Paxton.
Yeah,
plays one of the punks at the beginning.
Yeah, Dick Miller plays the gunshot.
Hey, what are you doing?
You can't do that. Yes, I can. Like we said, these movies in the mid-80s, these things were huge. Commando, Raw Deal, The Running Man, Red Heat.
Well, I think the opening shot of him in Commando is he's hoisted this big log and he's carrying over his head. It's great. Commando might be the quippiest of those bunch, or those films, that group of films.
And he had a lot of success when he tried his hand at comedy.
Yeah, he's terrific at marketing Arliss himself.
I think the first one was Twins, which was an Ivan Reitman movie.
Opposite where, Danny DeVito.
Yeah, Danny DeVito played his twin, and I think they didn't know each other, and they found each other, and DeVito was a little con man or something. But in production right now is the sequel to Twins. Did you know about that?
There have been rumors about that, but they're actually doing it.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger's coming back.
Schwarzenegger and
Danny
DeVito, but it's called Triplets, and guess who's playing the third twin?
Kevin Hart.
No, you're close. Eddie Murphy.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
I was going out on a limb there, but no.
It's Eddie Murphy. So he also did Kindergarten Cop in the 80s.
And, big hit.
And what was the one where he was the pregnant?
Junior. Yes, with Emma Thompson.
My body. My choice.
And Danny DeVito again, of course. Yeah. But I think one of his fathers in Twins was actually Hugh O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. Wyatt Earp.
And, of course, his daughter in Commando. You know where that was? That was Alyssa Milano.
Oh, yeah.
Pre Who's the Boss.
Yeah. Terminator 2 Judgment Day, 1991. Oh. That was a big event movie of the summer of 91, definitely.
I remember that. I remember just blown away by the effects in it. Mm-hmm. Especially the really, really best showcase for morphing, the CGI morphing at that time. Mm-hmm.
I think that was the first film that actually had like an actor that they morphed, that they used CGI over. It was the first time to use like that motion capture technology.
Yeah, the first type film. Yeah, with Robert Patrick's character.
Exactly.
Yeah. Was that the T-1000?
T-1000,
that's right.
Because Arnold plays the T-800.
Incredible. And then was True Lies right after that? Or
Last Action Hero was right after that. True Lies. which was James Cameron, who did the first two Terminator films.
And did True Lies.
And then did True Lies, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Have you ever killed anyone?
Yeah, but they were all bad.
Yeah, Last Action Hero, I remember actually seeing in the theater, and it looked, I had been hearing over the showbiz reports that there was trouble, and it seemed like there were a couple of scenes in there that were shot on videotape that they had to put in there right before it was released, and you didn't have time to even do it in 35mm or something.
See, John McTiernan can do no wrong in my eyes, so I love Last Action Hero.
Oh, my goodness, you're the one.
I love Predator. I love John McTiernan.
What has McTiernan done, though? What's he done in the past decade?
The last film, was it Basic? With John Travolta?
That sounds right.
But that's been about 8 or 9 years.
He was in jail for like tax evasion or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Was Sam Jackson in Basic with John Travolta? I think so.
If that's the film I'm thinking of, I think that might be the last film he did.
Yeah. But True Lies is another sort of expanding of it's got the family stuff in it, plus it's a good action spy film. So he kind of was showing a little bit more range in that too.
Yeah.
And he's married. Well, his scenes with Jamie Lee Curtis, especially her big striptease, very, very
iconic now. Because she's so buttoned up throughout the whole movie.
I think
she's got the glasses on. And, you know, and then she takes it off and it's the whole Hot for Teacher type of dance sequence.
He's the father of Eliza Dushku in that, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great. Went on to be a great action actress.
Yeah. Then he did Eraser, which was kind of more the same. Jingle All the Way, another comedy. He played Mr. Freeze in Batman and Robin, which everybody considers the worst Batman film.
Rightfully.
My name is Freeze. Learn it well. Was the chilling sound of your doom.
Although it wasn't Arnold's fault. Arnold's fine as Mr.
No. Well, there was some talk about Patrick Stewart playing this character, but I can see why they went with Arnold there. Mm-hmm. But it's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But that's kind of when Arnold's star started to descend a bit. I mean, he did End of Days and The Sixth Day and Collateral Damage, which were all these big action movies, but they didn't do nearly as well as the box office as his 80s stuff did.
Yeah. Then he went into politics. He sort of abandoned movies for a while there.
Oh, he was governor of California from 2003 to 2011.
Yeah, and then started to inch his way back, I guess, with a cameo. Was it in the second or first Expendables film?
He was in the first two Expendables.
Yeah. But a very small role in them, right?
Yeah, small roles in those. He was also in Around the World in 80 Days with Jackie Chan.
Then kind of abandoned politics and got back into movies.
Yeah, I think Terminator 3 was his last movie before he became governor.
Yeah.
Tina Loken was the villainous.
Yes, and Claire Danes was in it, and I was trying to think who played John Carter. Nick Stahl played John Carter.
But he became, in his post-governor career, I think the new Terminator is he's made 6 or 7 movies, and they haven't done, none of them have done particularly well. The Expendables movies. But The Last Stand, Escape Plan, Sabotage.
Was he in Lockup with Stallone, right?
Stallone, yeah.
No, it was called, wasn't that called Escape Plan?
Was that Escape Plan?
Yeah, Lockup was a Stallone movie from the 80s.
I'm confusing my Stallone films.
And they're not bad movies. I thought Sabotage was a pretty nice, rough, R-rated, violent action film. But he hasn't found an audience. I guess younger moviegoers really don't really get him, or maybe if they want to see
They kind of see him as a punchline now.
Yeah.
You know, that he's just doing the old man shtick, you know, that's trying to live out his glory days again. And I don't think he's connecting with audiences he used to in the 80s.
I think I remember Conan O'Brien's devastating impression of him on his show there.
Yeah.
He always speak like Arnold, like you're eating a sausage or something. Yeah. He says, that sort of thing.
And he would always jingle all the way.
Which is a pretty good family Christmas film, you know.
Yeah.
It's got its moments.
Yeah.
Turbo Man. I need the Turbo Man.
All right, so Terminator Genisys opens Wednesday, like we say we're seeing tonight. You're writing the review, Michael?
I will be writing the review.
That'll be a quickie. The advanced, I hate to say it, the advanced buzz is not promising.
I'm looking forward to that scene. Well, they have a little a sidebar about it in Entertainment Weekly where he fights his younger self. That could be a lot of fun, you know. Where Arnold 2015 is fighting Arnold 1984. That'd be kind of interesting.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but how bad can it be?
Man. Not as bad as me and Earl and Diamond, obviously.
Not another Tomorrowland or Aloha.
So we'll be back next week to talk about Terminator Genisys, and we can talk about that movie that we can't name, and we can talk maybe some more about Magic Mike XXL. What else opens?
There's supposed to be a small film called the Overnight opening here at the Tivoli, but I was supposed to get a screener of it, and I haven't yet. Hopefully it'll be in my mailbox.
That's with Adam Scott, right?
Yeah, Adam Scott and Jason Schwartzman.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and the
I saw a trailer for that.
Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black is in it also. Yeah.
Next week we're going to talk about James Horner a bit. Michelle is sort of our movie soundtrack aficionados, but James Horner was killed last week in a plane crash, private plane crash. Won Oscars, scored, you know, Braveheart and
Titanic and Avatar and just a terrific list of
Star Trek, Wrath of Khan.
That was my first influence by him. So
we'll talk a little bit more about him next week. We're going to have to wrap it up here for We Are Movie Geeks, the show podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh,
today,
sure,
guys.
Michael. Thanks for being on. We'll get you on here again.
You betcha.
All right. Signing off. I'm Tom Stockman.
I'm Jim Betts.
I'm Michael Hafner.
And tune in again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, Don.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock.